try to stay awake. You just had some sugar and stuff. And we're going to talk about going fishing with PNA fish for the rapid identification of pathogens in positive blood cultures. Now, that's not me in the chair, although it could be. It's my daughter. Now, how patronizing is that, that put your own daughter in your talk? But it serves a purpose, because this is the way I felt one day. This is how my Advantix story began. Four or so years ago, I was called into Dr. Youssef's office, my coworker, and there sat the Fish brothers in a chair up against the wall, eager, energetic, wanting me to talk about a new product from a company named Advantix. Well, I had five dogs at the time. I knew Advantix. They made anti-tick medication. But I didn't know about Advantix at the time, but they were very happy to tell me all about it being new products to rapidly diagnose pathogens from positive blood cultures. It was molecular. 4 years ago, that was a very scary word. I could just see the pipettes and the pipette tips coming out of the cabinet already. But it was FDA approved. That was good. It was a new company. Oh, that's a little scary. And they wanted to know if we were interested in validating or evaluating a new technique called PNA fish. Well, okay. So to fish or not to fish? So what ran through my mind that one afternoon when I had about 1,000 other things to do? Well, first off, no time is a good time to start a new test. Not these days, as short a staff as we are, and everyone is way too busy. And also, there's just burnout. How much new stuff, how many new procedures can you write? Also, there's no place to put new equipment. We've run out of electrical plugs. And how much new equipment is this new molecular assay really going to have? Is there a new computer to learn? Oh, how many more computer programs can you give me to learn? How many more passwords must I remember? Okay, yeah, come on, let's feel the pain together. Okay, also, there's always, in a new type of technique, you're going to have to train personnel. You have to validate that test. There's new CLSI procedures for validation. You have to write the procedures. The molecular methods can also be expensive. So can we afford doing these methods? Can we bill for these things? Can costs be offset by savings in other areas of the medical center, such as pharmacy savings or earlier discharge? That's so painful when you're a manager in a microlab. Pharmacy's going to save all this money. We're going to discharge somebody, but my God, I'm paying like $50,000 more a month for new tests. Well, sometimes that's not always appreciated as much by the hospital as we'd like for it to be. And I think the most important thing is, if we put forth all of this effort, will people really appreciate what we do? So while I was tied up in that chair in my coworker's office, those are all the things that I was thinking about at the time. Okay, one thing that helped me out that they are still doing and they will move into the future doing this is there's a startup package by Advantix. That helped eliminate some of my fear of what all I needed to buy to begin with. Don't you love it when you start something new and they give you a list of these like 15 things that you have to go out and buy on your own and look at vendors and check on this and get this and get this, and it takes you, you know, who cares after all of that? Well, the beauty of this startup kit by Advantix is they will give you many things in their startup kit. And if I'm really smart, maybe I can actually, hey, I can use it. I've learned something today. Here we go. Okay, Advantix actually provides these things for you, as in give these things to you to get you started. And that can be very, very helpful. You don't have to go out looking for these different things. Now, they will not give you a fluorescent microscope, so don't get too excited here. But they will give you the Texas Red dual band filter, a slide warmer, which we can call the PNA fish workstation, a 55-degree water bath, staining dishes. Of course, the fish kits come to you free for your validation, microscope slides, and cover slips. These are the things that you do have to supply in the laboratory to get you started trying this technique of PNA fish. So, is there room in my laboratory for this new equipment? Do we have plugs available to plug this stuff in? Well, the slide warmer that comes with the P&A fish, if you've not seen it, it's not all that large, 15 inches by 15 inches. We also eliminated an old slide warmer thing that we used to heat fix our blood films. So this became our blood film fixation station as well as our hybridization station for our P&A fish. Also, we had to get a small water bath that they gave to us, but it's only 10 by 13 inches. So you can see that the equipment that you need on your bench counter for starting this technique, they're not all that huge, okay? So that wasn't much of a problem. The other thing that ran through our minds, of course, is not everybody in our laboratory were familiar with using a fluorescent microscope. So do you really need a lot of experience to be able to effectively use P&A fish? A lot of the techs in our laboratory did not have previous experience reading fluorescent microscopy that worked our blood bench. A few had read AFB stains or some parasitology stains, but we didn't have a great deal experience on fluorescent microscopy. We had training sessions with most of the techs, or with all the techs that are working the blood bench, some do's and don'ts about the use of the fluorescent scope, and we have a team leader that's supposed to help us change the bulbs and call repair people and such things, so not all of us have to handle that responsibility. One of the problems that you might run into, and you have to make sure, that if you try to read your fluorescent on the fluorescent microscope, the P&A fish slides, and you do not use the Texas red filter, that's not going to work very well. So you have to make sure that when you're flipping your filters around, if you have multiple filters on your fluorescent scope, you have to make sure when you're sitting down to read the slides that you actually have the Texas red filter available for reading. We read with 60X oil lens, and then everything works out very, very well. Now, initial validations of the tests are undertaken in our laboratory, usually by microbiologists. But we were very devilish when we originally did our validation. It's one of those Friday afternoons, I think, when the Fish Brothers came by, and I was tired, and last thing I wanted to do was validate another test. So we had a pathology resident that was starting in our laboratory. And we made the decision, Dr. Youssef and I, that if a pathology resident could do this stain, just about anybody could. Now, that's nothing against our pathology residents. They are brilliant people. They are great scientists. But as you know, very few of them can even do a Gram stain. So we thought if we put a tech or myself in charge of a path resident, we let them try this new technique of P&A fish. If they could do it and get good results, we could implement this test in our laboratory. Okay? Well, lo and behold, my God, they did it. I couldn't believe it. We actually had a pathology We actually had a pathology resident do it, and they did a very nice job. I'll show you the data in a minute. It became an ASM abstract. Couldn't believe it. And the published package insert data showed that it was virtually 100% sensitivity and specificity. That's almost too good to be true, isn't it? But we validated kits and in a laboratory-designed validation, and what we found out was, yeah, that sensitivity is 100% sensitivity and specificity. We were really blown away by how clean the slides were, how easy they were to read, and we could even read the slides the pathology resident had done. They were even in good condition and well done. So really, I have to admit, from a very sleepy Friday afternoon with the Fish Brothers, I all of a sudden became quite impressed with what really could be a new molecular technology that could be useful in our laboratory. And this is the very clean data that we produce, which when you stand in front of a poster like that at ASM, you always wonder if people don't come by and go, yeah, sure, it's 100% in your lab, isn't it? But really, this is the actual data. It really is this clean. You could go to the Advantix website and see many other publications and posters and see that the data is almost always 98% or above for sensitivity and specificity. Well, that looked really good. So what if we implemented it on the first shift and had all the blood bench techs on the first shift do P&A fish? We tried our best to screw up this test. And after you throw it into your laboratory and have multiple people do it, you know, you really learn how good a test is and how it can function in a laboratory. But time and time again, the results were quite remarkably good, and we virtually had no disagreement with culture in our original validations of this technique. Beyond that, we had no major technologist revolt. They were singing praises of the PNA fish. Not really, but they were happy. It worked. Staining method wasn't that unfamiliar to them. I think that's one of the things that I find good about PNA fish. There's really nothing that you're asked to do that you're not kind of used to doing already. It's not massive amounts of pipetting, getting used to new instrumentation. It's a familiar kind of procedure that we've been through if you've done any kind of direct fluorescent antibody staining. Minor manipulations, no instrument maintenance. I get tired of instruments. They're wonderful creations, but sometimes you just, you're kind of glad that there's not an instrument to have to take care of. No instrument QC to be done except for taking temperatures on your water bath and on the hybridization station. No instrument at all. That's even better, that there's just not an instrument to take care of. And the CLSI procedure is on the Advantix website for all of the PNA fish probes, so you can use it as a template, and you just have to go in and make minor modifications to suit your own laboratory protocol. So after the first shift successfully did it, we thought, well, really to make use of this technique, which after all, one of the beauties of it is you get very rapid results, could we take it to the second and third shifts to see how the performance goes? We had a quite experienced second shift, and we really had no problems at all in performing the PNA fish. But the third shift, I never see them. Would they require assistance? Would this be okay? But they appreciated an interesting technique to perform, and we were so pleased that they did appreciate it and learned it very, very quickly. The second shift lead tech trained the third tech shifts, the third shift techs. That's a mouthful, isn't it, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? And if they had any problems, they were reported to the day shift to try to resolve some of the issues, or they would leave slides for us if there were some difficulties in interpretation. So that's how we handled shifts performing the test when I might not be around, or a lead tech that was more familiar with the staining. We've really had minimal problems instituting to all three shifts, and we've routinely done that since the first months, those 4 years ago that we started with PNA fish, and we have continued to stain on all three shifts. The workflow. Well, yes, when you start a new method, sometimes the workflow is going to change in your laboratory. And every lab does have unique workflow and very creative testing schedules for PNA fish and all the other tests that they perform. We may not be all that unique, but what we decided to do was to stain three shifts per day, including weekends. So we do 7 days a week. We do one staining per shift, three shifts per day. Other laboratories that I've talked to across the country may stain two times a shift. They may only do first or second shift. I think that's for every lab to do what suits their laboratory schedule. Why did we choose this testing schedule? Well, at Cedars, we are very fortunate that we have physicians and pharmacists that are on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that are capable of making antibiotic adjustments and decisions for discharge. So we thought to make best use of the rapid results that PNA fish can give you is to at least provide them 24 hours a day. So our workflow became, of course, the driving force behind a PNA fish is the Gram stain. That's how you choose the PNA fish probe to do. So we would Gram stain our positive blood culture bottles, perform a PNA fish based on that Gram result, work up cultures during the incubation of the PNA fish. So while it's hybridizing, we could go back and work on old cultures. We could call our physicians, whatever needs to be done during that time period. And then after PNA fish is available, we can call the physician at the Gram stain and or the PNA fish result. Some people are not calling their initial Gram stain report. They're waiting until their PNA fish result is out. We chose to go a different way. We call our original Gram stain from the bottle, and then we tell the physician that in about 2 hours or so, there will be a PNA FISH result on the computer, and we do not make another call. But this is available. You can shift this around and do whatever works best for your own laboratory. Okay, if you're not familiar with the PNA FISH result, this is basically how you do a PNA FISH. You, of course, shake the blood culture to make sure you distribute the organism. The visualization on a PNA FISH is going to be like that of a Gram stain. So if you have many, many organisms on your Gram stain, that's the way the PNA FISH will be as well. Makes sense, doesn't it? Okay, so shake that bottle, okay? Put some on a, you put the blood on the slide with the fixative. You then fix the cells by heat, flame, or methanol fixation. Immerse in ethanol for 5 minutes. The next very important step is the hybridization. You put one drop of your chosen PNA FISH probe onto the slide. Gram-positive cocci in clusters, therefore, would be the Staph aureus probe. You put a cover slip on, and then you hybridize that for at 55 degrees for 90 minutes. This temperature is very important, and there's, of course, a very sensitive temperature control on this hybridization unit. During this time, you prepare and preheat the wash solution to 55 degrees that go into the water bath, which is provided by Advanix. You wash it and at 55 degrees for 30 minutes. Once again, it's very temperature dependent. And then you take it out and let it dry and put one drop of mounting medium and cover slip. And then you go to the fluorescent microscope, make sure you have on your Texas Red dual filter, and read for positive or negative reactions. So that's the way you do a PNA FISH. Really nothing all that difficult to do. Now, did we have problems along this little rosy path that I'm telling you about? Well, someone once tried to use a regular microscope slide rather than a PNA FISH slide. It's not in the procedure and didn't work very well. You must use the PNA FISH slides provided by Advantix because there's a special coating on the slide which starts the hybridization process, and you need to use their slides, okay? So we learned that. Also, occasionally we had some confusing results recorded on work cards. You have to be careful in recording positives and negatives instead of green or red, because what's positive? Green is positive red. Is negative green is negative red. So you really need to state the color so there is no confusion in what the result from the PNA FISH is. We had an initial reluctance to report mixed findings. You will have both Staph aureus and coag negative Staph in a blood culture at some times, but we're kind of over that now. But most of our reports do have single organisms. One time, someone thought that the stain had gone bad, that it wasn't staining. It was very muted and looked funny, but we found that they had the wrong filter put onto the fluorescent microscope. So you have to make sure that you're using the Texas Red filter, or you're going to get very muted or no color at all. And, of course, the worst thing that happens in utter panic is the bulb burns out in the fluorescent microscope. And, of course, we have a team leader capable of doing that. Okay, but those are the kind of things and problems that we had. Those are really not major difficulties. Those are things that really you can get over as time moves on. So that's our story from the initial validation, which I think really went very, very smoothly. And over the years, we've done many additional validations and made improvements in our processing and our reporting. As new kits were released, of course, we had new validations to do. And during these times, we decided to spare the poor pathology resident from doing any more validations. And we did the validations on the bench with the blood bench technologist. Every laboratory has their own ways and means of doing validation procedures, but of course validations are certainly required in implementing these techniques in your laboratory. You can perform them daily alongside existing PNA FISH methods for comparisons, or if you're beginning from scratch, you might have to compare them back to your culture method. Now, one thing that you have to understand is PNA FISH testing is a very sensitive and specific technique, and it can replace many standard biochemical tests in your culture workup. Now, this was kind of a reluctance that we had early on because we're also set in our ways. Man, that tube coag, we're going to hang on that till probably the day I go to, into the grave, we will be doing tube coags and some of those standard things. But you really don't need them with PNA fish. The sensitivity and specificity of PNA fish far exceeds things like direct tube coagulase and some of the older tests that we used to use in blood culture workups. So you can help to offset the cost, because I hate to tell you, you got to pay for this, you know? But you can offset some of these costs by eliminating some of these tests that you would normally have done to validate your cultures in your laboratory. Once again, this is a workflow issue. Every laboratory probably validates and has methods of assuring that the test result is appropriate. We look at colony morphology. You may go a different route, but you can eliminate a lot of the standard biochemical tests that you used to use. Do remember, you can offset costs, but please do remember you can bill PNA fish results. There are specific PNA fish CPT codes that can be used. And in all the molecular tests that we're going to start using in microbiology, there's going to be excessive costs. And so you do need to learn how to build these methods and make sure that you do recover some of your money. Okay, now what do these things look like? I've had all this preamble to all of this stuff. What do these tests actually look like? Well, of course, this is what a Staph aureus coag-negative Staph PNA fish probe would look like. Your choice is, of course, guided by your direct Gram stain result. Gram stain is Gram-positive cocci in clusters. The Staph aureus would be green. Your coag-negative Staph would be red. And if it is not a Staph, but is perhaps Micrococcus aurothea or another gram-positive cocci, it would not stain at all. And as I'm saying, in our validations, we've had virtually 100% sensitivity and specificity using PNA fish to identify Staph aureus and coag-negative Staph. This is what the Enterococcus faecalis probe looks like. This is guided by a direct gram stain of gram-positive cocci in pairs and chains. Your Enterococcus faecalis will be green. The other enterococci, which in our laboratory and most labs are predominantly Enterococcus faecium, will stain red. And the non-enterococci, such as beta hemolytic strep and viridin strep, will not stain. And then finally, Candida albicans and Candida glabrata. The Gram stain, of course, would be yeast. Albicans stains a very vivid green. Glabrata red, and then the non-albicans and non-glabrata, mainly in our laboratory, it would be parapsilosis, that would not stain. So that's the way the stains are performed and what they would visualize underneath the microscope. Now, just doing these stains is, of course, a very labor-saving things in the laboratory, eliminates a lot of testing, and provides you with very, very good results. But perhaps that's not maybe the strong point of PNA fish. I think what the Fish Brothers tried to impress upon me and has continued to impress upon me over time is PNA fish is not just about a laboratory result. It's about what you do with that laboratory result to have actions by pharmacists and physicians to make good decisions that could lead to better use of antibiotics, earlier discharge, and possibly cost savings to your institution. So what you need to be able to do is to communicate this information to the physician so that they understand what you're saying to them and the value of the information. Now, every lab is different on how they provide individualized reports to their physicians, but this is a suggestion that was made by a poster by the University of Maryland. They don't just simply send out Staph aureus by PNA fish. They actually add comments to lead the pharmacists or physicians or whoever's looking at this data to make legitimate and educated decisions on how this result can be used. So with a Staph aureus PNA fish result, they'll say, according to this year's antibiogram, 60, 70% or whatever, of Staph aureus are methicillin-resistant MRSA, guiding them to use vancomycin and of course, stray away from oxacillin. Coag-negative Staph, you could attach a comment in, say, one out of two bottles or one out of four bottles of coag-negative Staph, that in after investigations, of course, you have data to back this up, Coagnating staph are the most common venipuncture or collection-associated skin contaminants grown in blood cultures. So you're trying to tell them that you think that this is most likely a contaminant and might not need therapy. And then, of course, if it's negative, you need to tell them that it's negative for staph aureus and coagnating staph. Now, do doctors actually use this information? This is something that I was really concerned about. Here we are spending all this money, some extra time, workflow changes, learning something new. Will anyone actually appreciate this? Well, once again, the Fish Brothers made a suggestion to me. Let's have a luncheon with ID doctors and pharmacists to introduce this technique to them so they understand our results and will understand what you're reporting to them. I don't know if I would have done that on my own. I would have talked and made phone calls or something. But we had this presentation, much like I'm doing to you now, very simple, because they're doctors after all, but very simple. This, we put this on the slide. No, I'm joking. But it was very simple because they don't care much about the lab part. They care more about what can this result do for me. And we found out that maybe this result does more for them than we actually thought it would. It's really not unusual to have a doctor call and say, where's the fish result? I'm waiting for it. And ask when it's going to be ready. We also had the mycology tech ask one time, you're kind of slow turning your yeast IDs around from your blood cultures. Why don't you let them do that PNA fish thing on it? And so, because PNA fish is much faster for albicans and glabrata than any of the manual methods that we can do. Our pediatricians have become very reliant upon the coag-negative staph PNA fish, and they do result in discharge. They do discharge patients after viewing our PNA fish results for coag-negative staph, and we know that that's made a major impact in pediatrics. Our adult infectious disease docs have gone a little differently. Not that they don't appreciate the coag-negative staph result, but they tend to see more yeast in blood cultures. So they rely on the Canada PNA fish for fungal therapy management. If they have Canada albicans or not, they will know whether they could use fluconazole or not. And I'll talk about that in some algorithms in just a minute. So I really felt kind of good about this. It's never a bad thing for the microbiology to be useful, to provide rapid information. And in all of this talks like we've had before with infection control and turning results around quickly for hospital-acquired infection, we're kind of playing a role in that too. We're trying to get things out as rapidly as we can, and it seems to be making a difference. Now, we have not done a lot of published reports on this, but there are reports in the literature. If mine are just incidental or anecdotal information, but there are actually published reports showing the impact of PNA fish on money savings in the hospital, earlier discharge. And if you would like to go to the Advantix website, if you need to have some supporting evidence in order to supply funds to purchase PNA fish through your hospital, the Advantix website has a lot of publications directing toward the financial end of the use of PNA fish. Now, this is an algorithm that the University of Maryland used and how it can affect therapy. Now, you have your gram-positive cocci, which you perform your PNA fish. And let's say it turned out to be green. In the University of Maryland, 28% of their positive blood cultures had staph aureus with gram-positive cocci in clusters. They know that 65 to 70% of their staph aureus are MRSAs, so they know they need to use vancomycin, linezolid, or some type of aggressive therapy. 72% are coag-negative staph and are contaminants. Over 98% of their coag-negative staph, after being investigated, were actually contaminants. And so they would withdraw therapy and think if the patient is, of course, appropriate to do so. And then they wait for the non-staph, understanding that there is virtually very, very low likelihood that that's going to end up being a staph aureus. This is how they use the Enterococcus. Same sort of thought is process going on. Enterococcus faecalis, and you'll know in your own institution too that probably almost 0% of them are ampicillin resistant. So if we can report out Enterococcus faecalis in a couple of hours after we pull that positive blood culture, that's very useful in management. They know they don't have to use a linezolid directly, they could use ampicillin. And they also know in their institution, very low percentage are VRE. But boy, the story changes. If we send out an Enterococcus species not efficalis, it's going to be 100% resistant to ampicillin. So if that patient happened to be on ampicillin at that time, they would know very rapidly they need to make a change. In this institution of Maryland, 65% of those were VRE. So they know they've got a problem. If they have a rapid fish result that's Enterococcus other than efficalis, the likelihood of it being VRE is very high. So that's going to mean isolation in the use of something like linezolid. And once again, if it was not Enterococcus, with very, very high sensitivity and specificity, they can back off the use of vancomycin in linezolid because we're trying to preserve the use of vancomycin because of its potential to cause things like VRE. And yeast. How does yeast, how can you use this information to change management if you find yeast? Candida albicans, of course, it has very low resistance to fluconazole. So with a rapid result of C. albicans by PNA fish, they feel comfortable staying on fluconazole. If it's glabrata in Maryland, they see 28% fluconazole resistance, so that's above comfort level. So they're going to consider a switch away from fluconazole. And then other yeast, such as Parapsilosis and Tropicalis, will not stain on the current on this particular algorithm. The fluconazole resistance is low, so it's based on how they feel about the patient until the culture is confirmed. Okay, so that's how the results have been used and convincing you that this information is very useful, not just to the laboratory looking good in sending out a rapid result, but it can be used by pharmacy and physicians. Now, it looks like the validations are going to continue. This is a very active, moving forward company. And by the time I sent these slides to BioMérieux to be put into this computer system, they had two FDA approvals before I stood up here today. So this slide is a tad bit inaccurate. As of 10 days ago, the pending approval was a rapid platform. The yeast traffic light, gram-negative assays, and control slides. But as of last Thursday, I believe, the control slides are now available for purchase, and they are FDA approved. And as of yesterday, I believe, if not Monday, the yeast traffic light was approved. So there's new assays as I stand before you speaking, which I will talk about a little bit right now, not knowing that they were going to be FDA approved, and you can actually buy them. Okay, first off, let's talk about some of the work we did at Cedars and an abstract that we actually did at the last ASM convention. And this is for making the PNA fish assay faster. When I originally went through the protocol, it showed a 90-minute hybridization step. But within the last ASM, there were several posters presented, and this method is FDA pending and will soon, hopefully, be part of the package insert. But I do want you to know for right now, it is still FDA pending. You can see the changes in this protocol and how it will speed it up. You can eliminate the 5-minute ethanol fixation over here to the left, and you only have to hybridize for 30 minutes. You're currently, the package insert says you must hybridize for 90 minutes. By cutting out an hour of hybridization, you can really move through this assay much quicker and get your results even faster onto the chart. And the rest of the method has not changed. The biggest thing was cutting down the hybridization step. Okay, the next one, which is FDA approved now, as of, I said, I think yesterday or day before, is the yeast traffic light. And this is a very novel approach to staining for yeast. Now, as you probably know, the species identification from blood culture bottles for yeast can take several days, at least 2 or 3 days for maybe Parapsilosis, Tropicalis, for some of those. Antifungal therapy is certainly based on species identification, and you know that doctors always want speciation of yeast from blood cultures. There's also varying levels of fluconazole resistance amongst the Candida species. Candida albicans and Parapsilosis without prior azole exposure are rarely resistant to fluconazole. Canada tropicalis may have some intermediate resistant results. Canada glabrata, most common species, showing higher level resistance to fluconazole. And Canada cruzii is almost always resistant to fluconazole. And so the purpose of this yeast traffic light is not just to provide you a rapid result. It's to put a little bit step further than that. It's to group the yeast into groups based on fluorescence patterns and by their resistance to fluconazole. So what they've tried to do is develop the groupings based on, can you go ahead with the green with fluconazole? Do you have to kind of stop and think about it? It's a yellow tropicalis. It may be resistant to fluconazole. Or stop and think. Fluconazole is possibly high-level resistance and should not be used. So it's not just a test of identification. It's to provide information for therapy choices. So it kind of takes it a little step further. And then if there's no color, it is negative. So you get the trend of go, slow down, and stop with your fluconazole, okay? Okay, the other assays, which are still pending in the FDA, but hopefully will be out before too long, are PNA fish assays for gram-negative bacillus. Now, in the gram-negative PNA test concept is a little bit like the yeast concept. A lot of it is dependent upon antimicrobial resistance patterns. You know that the identification, even with our wonderful Vitek 2, still take a while to get a genus and species from a positive blood culture bottle. And, of course, antibiotic therapy can depend on species identification. So we can have varying types of antibiotic patterns based on, of course, organism identification. These days, we're worried about E. coli and Klebsiella may exhibit ESBL-type resistance. And Pseudomonas aeruginosa oftentimes can be multi-drug resistant. So the gram-negative rod PNA fish gives you rapid species identification to provide information for the selection of antimicrobial therapy. It's not just thought to be identification. These will come in two different packages, as I understand, is you could buy one that is just E. coli and Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Your E. coli would stain green with the fish probe. The aeruginosa would be red. This would be a mixed. And if it's another genus or species of organism, it would not stain. So you can see this could be very useful. This could be E. coli. I might worry about ESBL. I might have to use imipenem. This is Pseudomonas aeruginosa, and you'd need to go to what your current resistance pattern is in your own hospital. That might lead you to cefepime or some other appropriate antibiotic. Another way you could go with this assay is grouping it in E. coli or Klebsiella pneumonia is green. This is searching out possible ESBLs. Or red is Pseudomonas aeruginosa. If you had both colors in your assay, you would not know if it was E. coli, Klebsiella, and you would also know, along with one of those, it would be Pseudomonas aeruginosa. If it was not any three of these species, it would be negative. Okay? Okay. The other thing that just came through, those of you who are already using PNA fish might be excited to hear about this, is there's been FDA approval of the control slides. And so they are now available for purchase, and you can buy PNA fish control slides for staff, Enterococcus, and Canada. We were pleased to get some last Friday to try, and we did have an opportunity to stain the staff and the Enterococcus using these controls. They're very nice, clean controls. Excuse me. They worked very well in our hands. It would save you the time from having to grow organisms in bottles and make your own control slides. It's just another, maybe an easier way you could go about doing your PNA fish assays, but there's certainly nothing wrong if you would like to continue to make your own controls. This is just trying to make the overall technique a little bit simpler for you in your laboratory. Then in summary, PNA fish really is a simple molecular procedure to implement. It requires only the use of a fluorescent microscope, and the other simple instruments are given to you by Advanix. You are going to need some workflow changes. It might be painful for a day or two. There may still be that compulsion. You're just going to die to do that direct tube coag. But I'll tell you, you'll get past it. You will. You will get past it. When doctors start singing your praises and administration thinks you're wonderful, you will get past that standard tube coag. You can eliminate some of your standard biochemicals. That is your comfort level in your entire laboratory. But I would say with close to 100% sensitivity and specificity, I don't know many PYRs and other things that are that good. PNA FISH reports, though, do need to be timely and educational. Then the information can be useful and cost-saving. Educate the doctors and the pharmacy what you're trying to tell them. Physician education, if they understand the results and how they can be used, they're really going to buy into this and be very happy. Whoops. And then finally, rapid results with PNA FISH have shown to reduce mortality and costs associated with Staph aureus bacteremia. The articles are on the Advantix website. Reduce length of stay and unnecessary vanco use due to CNS contaminated blood cultures. Reduce time to correct therapy and mortality to Ephesium bacterium, and reduce antifungal drug costs associated with Candida albicans fungemia. So with that, I hope for a happy trip home on the 405. I will be thinking of you, and thank you for sharing your afternoon with me.